Bill Hagerlis, along with Don Landry. Hey, reading my own writing. I'm sorry. It's one of those things. Penmanship doesn't always work. Welcome to this week's podcast. This week, MLSE out of their past. Margaret and Doug sitting in a tree, A-R-G-U-I-N-G. Nicole Turmel has a new job and a history. The sheepdogs take a good picture and lots more. Settle in and enjoy. It's the gist of it.
What about the Dunkin' Donuts story? Oh, you gotta hear the Dunkin' Donuts story.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
Don, it's another week, another heat wave, although this one hasn't been nearly as bad as one or two of the others that we had to go through the beginning of this summer. Got your attention, and I think that's fair. A good thing, too, is we're now into August, so you can see the end is coming. For me, I'm one of those, I'm a typical Canadian. When it's cold, I want summer. When it's warm or hot, I want winter. So I'm in the middle of it right now.
See, no, I'm atypical then, because I'm not complaining about the hot weather. In fact, the day the Humidex went to 50, I was indoors most of the day, you know, trying to keep cool and that. But as soon as I heard on the weather network it hit 50, I had to go for a walk. Just to say that I was out on a day where it was 50. It was beautiful. It felt like I was, the city of Toronto was one of those giant dry saunas.
Exactly.
A wonderful time.
You wanted to wear tongs and a towel.
I'm not going to, well, I did. I did.
Oh, the only
the mistake I made was not wearing flip-flops. Bare feet on the asphalt, not good. All right?
Okay.
But,
fair enough.
I don't complain about the hot weather. I love it. And let me just say this. The people who will complain about the heat as well as the winter, I say this often. You don't have to shovel humidity. Except that one day when it went to 50. Then you actually had physically part the humidity to get anywhere. To get your car to the driveway, you had to shovel humidity out of there before you could roll.
Well, speaking of shoveling, let's get into the gist of it.
Bombs away, boys. Bombs away.
I don't happen to think MLSE is an evil empire. I don't believe they're robbing fans of the blue and white of their money, not to mention their hopes, maybe even their souls the way some do. The talk that they don't care about winning is nonsense. Everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to win. MLSE out to crush the little guy? I don't think so, but I do think they want to make as much money as they can and that they'd like to do it as fast as they can. So what? So do most businesses. However, in the case of MLSE v. Ryerson, Bill, I think they need to give their collective head a shake or hire Zdeno Chara to do it for them. Either way, MLSE sold Maple Leaf Gardens to Loblaws. Loblaws made a deal with Ryerson, a good deal, to allow a hockey arena, albeit a little itty-bitty one, to be part of the reclamation project of Maple Leaf Gardens. 2,500 seats, a home for the Ryerson hockey team, maybe a few concerts. MLSE seems to think that the little theater that they'll have in there could compete with the ACC for concerts, 2,500 seats or 19,000 seats. Where do you think Lady Gaga is going to perform? Most acts suited to a 2,500-seat concert bowl are not suited, at least not presently, for the ACC. Not the worst part, though. The worst part is that apparently they filed an injunction to keep Ryerson from calling their arena Maple Leaf Gardens. Well, it's already called Maple Leaf Gardens, has been historically for decades, and thank you, Conn Smythe, for that. It's a heritage site, an historic site. It is Maple Leaf Gardens, a name, by the way, MLSE doesn't use anymore because they opted for the more financially friendly Air Canada Centre. From the hockey team to the Beatles to Elvis and countless other historic engagements, I'll remind you, Bill, that Maple Leaf Gardens was the place where Duran Duran shot their video for The Reflex. Maple Leaf Gardens is a name that belongs to the city of Toronto, forever entwined with the city's 20th century history. It's gone far beyond the scope of trademark and territorial protection, in my mind. It's like Kleenex or aspirin, both of which, by the way, you need to keep on hand if you're watching one of MLSE's prized teams. Imagine if I sold you Casa Loma and built my own new castle somewhere else, and I named it, I don't know, Air Canada Castle. Imagine me telling you that you can't call your castle Casa Loma because I took the name with me. People would find that petty and nonsensical, and guess what? I think they'd call it Casa Loma anyway. So regardless of the legal outcome, no matter the name they eventually hang on the thing, the building at Church in Carlton will always be, for me, Maple Leaf Gardens.
And it always will be for everybody. And by the way, I'm extremely concerned that you referenced Duran Duran in there.
You've gone too far this time.
Oh, there's a special place in hell for them. But that's just me. One of the things we try to do is talk about the things people are talking about. It's called water cooler talk. You know, what people are talking about at the water cooler in the office. Sometimes it's about a hot new movie or the tragic death of a star like Amy Winehouse. Maybe some TV show that has caught everyone's attention. Increasingly, though, it seems to be something generated by the dreaded 24-hour news monster. It's hard to say how it is or why it is that some stories just seem to take off. The U.S. debt ceiling fiasco is just the latest to do so. Before that, it was Rupert Murdoch and the phone hacking scandal, preceded by the Casey Anthony trial. The point is, as Roseanne Rosanadana said, it's always something. So true. Always something. Bad. Or so it seems. When Ted Turner launched CNN in 1980, many people felt it couldn't survive. I mean, really, what was the viability of a 24-hour news channel? How could such a thing turn a profit? Well, they've done very well, thank you. So much so, there are at least four other 24-hour news channels in Canada and the U.S. right now. Their content doesn't vary much, and when one of those stories does weasel its way into our zeitgeist, they all jump on it. It's a monster, Don, that must be fed, and it ain't going away anytime soon.
Bill, there's an employee, well, probably an ex-employee now, at a Dunkin' Donuts in New Jersey. I don't know if you've heard this story yet, but I'm going to put it out there for you. Was arrested for turning tricks during her shift at Dunkin' Donuts. Where else could this happen but New Jersey? I guess Vegas, you know, places like, maybe L.A.
Vegas is legal.
It just, I think it is. That's right. You get married by Elvis. You go to the Dunkin' Donuts. And you have a three-way. So, you know, she's arrested in a sting operation that's called, appropriately enough, I guess, extra sugar. I love that. Now, so the story comes down, and I'm thinking of all these punchlines, Bill. None of them are clean. Most of them are dirty as you know what. Euphemistic as well, of course, with donut products and things like that.
There's so many things
you could
do.
I mean, can you possibly come up with a clean punchline to this story? I have not been able to do it in very nearly 24 hours.
Well, the only thing I can think of, and it's not really a punchline, but I think of Dutchies. I don't know why? But I think of a Dutchie, and then I think, you know, maybe a Dutchie is a word I don't know, but it could mean something, I don't know, a little off color.
That's what,
something on the menu.
Where what I said about euphemisms just flying out, mm-hmm. And
they're everywhere.
You can think of them with, I mean, I'm not so familiar with Dunkin' Donuts products, but I mean, I know if this happened at a Tim Hortons, it would probably, this is the cleanest punchline I could come up with. And a friend of mine came up with it too, independently, actually, in which is it brings a whole new meaning to the phrase double-double, or at least can.
Yes.
You know, that's about as close to clean, I guess, as I could get on this one. You don't want to hear the other punchlines, I don't think.
No, the other thing that's interesting about it was, you know, the cops, I think it took, what, 6 weeks for them to, which is like, wait a second, how much do you have to get to understand that there's a problem here? And they're writing everything off. I mean, you see cops, or at least it certainly appears as if you see cops at donut stores all the time. Although, you know, I must say, I don't. Maybe it's the times I go. I don't know, but
I guess, yeah.
You keep hearing about that.
Tim Hortons has the roll up the rim. I think at this particular Dunkin' Donuts, it was roll down the rim of you know what. There you go. Finally came up with one that was half decently. It's still dirty, but it's not that dirty.
This is the gist of it.
Here's a question for you, Mr. Hayes. You're having lunch, and it will be with one of two people, and they'll do most of the talking. Would you prefer Margaret Atwood or Doug Ford?
Margaret Atwood.
See, and I know why. Because just before you answered, that gave me all I need to know. You were thoughtful about the answer. Of course you would rather sit with Margaret Atwood because if nothing else, she's more thoughtful, I do believe, than Doug Ford. And that.
Well, I was thinking more along the Egghead or Doughhead, and I'll go with Egghead. but yeah, I think your point's well made.
I think I would go with Margaret Atwood too, because even if I disagreed with much of what she might say, and I don't know that I would, I could at least have a conversation and be interested and maybe at times thrilled, but at least my brain would be stimulated a little bit. I don't get the sense that I would get that a lot with Doug Ford. There'd just be a lot of, you know, one-liners, dismissive comments, like I wouldn't know her if she walked by me, as he said that of Margaret Atwood.
What's the point of that?
You know, I think he was trying to be glib and cute. Guess what, Doug? That made you look bad, not her. But Margaret Atwood now is continuing the fight, if you will, this week, saying, I'm not running for mayor.
Yet.
I think that if Margaret Atwood had political aspirations and really wanted to run for office, I think we would have seen that a long, long time ago. She's just kind of kidding right now. But the point she made, I think, in an ironic fashion was that you don't have to be in office to be heard. And that's another point that came up, I think, during this whole free-for-all between the two of them, was, you know, Doug Ford saying if she wants to, you know, become a counselor and get elected by the people, then I'll listen to her. Big mistake, wrong thing to say, not true in our democracy, by the way. And Atwood has reiterated that you don't need to be an elected official to have your voice heard in Canadian democracy.
I'll tell you, Don, and I've said this to you before, I've admitted to it before, that I did vote for Doug's brother, Rob, for mayor. And I did it for a philosophical reason. I won't go into much detail, but I thought it was time that there was some fiscal responsibility brought to City Hall. And I'll leave it at that. I did not go do such a thing in the single-minded pursuit of changing our city into something that none of us want to see. And I do tend to think that what's happened with the Ford administration is that they have taken that election to mean they have carte blanche to cut every and anything they deem necessary. That's not the case. And I think what they'll have to understand over time is that that, in fact, is not the case. Their single-minded pursuit of one issue, and that is the bottom line, will end up meaning that they're going to be a one-term administration.
Do you like Margaret Atwood's writing? Are you a fan of Margaret Atwood?
Not really. No, I appreciate it, and I certainly... I have an awful lot of respect for her, but yeah. I'm not a big fan.
It doesn't correlate with the issues we're talking about. I'm just, you know, curious, and you don't have to be a fan of Margaret Atwood's to recognize her if she walks by you, or to understand that.
No, I would. Certainly, well, I would
understand. Yeah, that's what I mean. But I mean, you don't have to be a fan of hers to understand how important her canon of work is, not just for Canadians, but in the literary community worldwide. She's obviously a brilliant woman, somebody who cares deeply about social issues, cares deeply, again, obviously, about literature. And I'm glad she's speaking out. I may even go to the Facebook page, Margaret Atwood for mayor. Bill, it worked for Betty White. Why not for Margaret Atwood?
Don, we didn't really talk an awful lot about Jack Layton, the return of cancer, and how we hope he is taking some time to recover. He certainly was a tremendous story in the last election, especially in Quebec. And it is from Quebec that the NDP have chosen a replacement for him on an interim basis as leader of the opposition, and that's Nicole Turmel. Of course, the word now comes out that Nicole Turmel, up until fairly recently, was a Bloc Québécois member. And that has got an
while she was a member of the NDP.
Well, yeah. Well, but it has an awful lot of people really upset because, hey, she's a separatist.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, she may or may not be. I don't know. I can't hand down a judgment on that just yet. Proof will be in the pudding. What I do believe is that it's improper to be a member of two parties at the same time. Never mind that one of them has separatist tendencies. Let's just say she's a member of the Liberal Party. since 1991. And to help a friend, which is something else we need to get into, she joins the Conservative Party as well. Would people not frown on that? Would that be cricket? Would that be acceptable? And, oh, well, you're a member of the Liberals and the Conservatives.
I
don't think it would wash. Unusual? I don't know that it's ever happened before.
Oh, I'll bet you it's happened. How would you know? Yeah. I mean, you know, really, I think that what's unfortunate for her is she's not only gotten herself elected, and I think this is something else you have to look at, too. As a member of the NDP in Quebec, there's very little chance up until fairly recently that she was even going to get on a ballot, let alone win a seat.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'll give her a little bit of slack on that. And I don't think that it's that big a deal that she was a Bloc Québécois for a while. I like you say, I kind of find it hard to believe it's because she's a friend. But
let me talk about that for just a second. I was gobsmacked when she said that.
Yeah.
I joined the Bloc to help a friend. Like, what are you, 14?
You know what I
thought? You're a 14-year-old teenage girl in high school, and your friend joined the chess club, and you don't want her to feel lonely or cast out, so you join. Your other friends say, hey, what are you, a geek? You've joined the chess club. And she's, no, I just did it to help a friend, and there could be cute boys there. It's like, come on, that is no answer for a grown woman to give as the leader of a political party.
What school did you go to that had cute boys in the chess club?
Got to tell you, Bill, I was in the chess club. Does that answer your question? You're just
proving my point. If you're going to put your chin out, I'm going to hit it.
So if she really believes that that's a valid answer to that, I don't know that she's fit to be the leader of a federal party.
Oh, hey.
And here's the other thing. She may not really believe that, Bill, because I'm here to tell you that what has been known to happen, politicians occasionally bend the truth to a point where you might actually say they're lying. And I'm not going to accuse her of lying, but she can't really believe that that's a good reason to give for being a member of two federal parties at the same time.
The first thing I thought of, Don, and I don't think I'm alone in this, was Bill Clinton. When he was asked about smoking pot when he was in university, he came clean and said, yeah, I smoke pot, but I didn't inhale. Which, again, okay, because, you know, the reason was it was the politically expedient answer. That's all she's done here, you know, because she's not going to tell you why she joined it. That might not be a thing that she could get out from under.
Yeah.
Saying she joined for a friend, well,
people are going to accept that. You think people are going, oh, she just tried to help her friend. Sure, we all do that.
Yeah.
I think it's possible that you could be a member of the Bloc Québécois and not believe that separation for Quebec is...
Well, I think it's even likely.
Well, yeah, if you really get into the nuts and bolts of what, you know, the NDP platforms are and what the Bloc Québécois platforms, can you still say are? Do they still...
They're still around, but...
They still have platforms.
They're kind of low in the grass.
There are some similarities there.
Sure.
So I do believe that there can be some kismet there between the parties. And after all, I have told you before that... During different elections, I voted for different parties for different reasons. And when I look at all of the parties, I'm sure that I can find different stances and planks that I might agree with or lean toward.
I see no problem with her being a member of the NDP and a member of the Bloc at the same time. As you said, some of their platforms are very similar. And I would go so far as to say that she probably wasn't alone in that. Look at the results of this last election.
NDP dropped the ball on this one, I think, in ascending her to the position of interim
leader. Well, it doesn't
look
good on him, for sure.
You know, they should have gotten Bob Ray. What's he doing now? Does anyone know where he is?
It's Bill Hayes and Don Landry, and you're getting the gist of it.
Bill, I don't often think of Dr. Hook lyrics these days. When you're in love with a beautiful woman.
Great song.
That's a great song. That's not the one that popped into my head, although now that is going to be there for the better part of a week.
God bless you.
We keep getting richer, but we can't get our picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone. The Sheepdogs, I don't know how rich they were getting, banned out of Saskatchewan, but
very,
they
from what
are
I understand.
On the cover of Rolling Stone, and they won a contest. It was tied in with the Jimmy Fallon show. They appeared on the Fallon show last night. All of a sudden, they have rocketed to superstar. I guess there's more. There are more ways than just a fixed camera, your piano, singing a Lady Gaga song.
True.
Put it on YouTube to get famous. You can actually grind it out in the club still, Bill. You can still do that. You can earn your chops, and then you can get a break. And here's one for the Sheepdogs. I don't really know an awful lot about their music. I read that they're kind of 70s based. And what I do know is their lead singer, Ewan Curry. Does he not look to you like he's channeling Will Ferrell in the fabled cowbell sketch?
Yeah, sadly, there's something to that.
I hope they have a lot of cowbell in their music. You hit they look the part.
They do. You hit a real good note there, too, because I'm a big music fan, and it has bothered me no end that those people who learned the hard way or lived the hard way to get where they are, those guys playing in the barbs and spending years on the road, finally getting their just rewards, at least in this case. Because too often, we haven't seen that lately. The music business has changed an awful lot, as you mentioned. You put something up on YouTube, if it goes viral, boom, you're a star. Sometimes it's warranted, a lot of times, not so much. These guys worked really hard for this. They are a good band. Yeah. They really are. I like what I've heard of them. And I hope this is a stepping stone to bigger and better things. They got a record deal with Atlantic Records out of this. That's a start. You got to like that.
It says something about Rolling Stone too, doesn't it?
I wouldn't say that.
It's not what it used to be, obviously, back in the day.
Right.
When that's what mattered, waiting for the printed edition of anything to come out, and especially Rolling Stone. You're on the cover of Rolling Stone, and I would have thought that maybe that didn't mean so much anymore, but I think it does. Or is it just that, you know, a Canadian band got into the final and then finally won it that we were hearing so much
about? What it meant was, and good on them for this, they actually decided to give some band a break. Yeah. I think it's a win-win situation all the way around. I agree with you that Rolling Stone is nowhere near the magazine it used to be. I don't think that they represent an era like they did.
It's not the cultural touchstone that it used to be.
Absolutely.
But still can be from time to time.
In some ways it is, because this contest fits exactly into what we're all about. Send us something on YouTube. Send us a video of what you're doing. And it worked on so many different levels, not just for the Sheepdogs, but for everybody else who entered. Bands of people that would never have gotten a sniff got one there. And I hope this actually becomes an annual event for Rolling Stone magazine. And based on its success, it just might.
For those of you who don't have rich parents who can go out and produce your video and put it on YouTube, Friday, Rebecca Blacklike, there's some hope. You can get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone, and it can still matter.
Don, the Major League trade deadline happened on Sunday afternoon, and the Toronto Blue Jays didn't do anything on Sunday. Mind you, last Wednesday, they made a big deal, 14 players potentially, definitely 11, three teams, and the gist of it is they bring in their center fielder of the future, Colby Rasmus. Now, I remember reading about Colby Rasmus before he got to St. Louis to play for the Cardinals, and he was considered one of the top prospects in baseball, an outfielder who could do it all. He's a five-tool player, and it didn't work there. And one of the reasons apparently is that his father was a bit of a meddler, or at least that's what they believed in St. Louis.
Right.
I don't believe it. I believe.
Why not?
Well, I don't believe that his father would have been any different than any other dad. I believe it's true of most professional athletes that if they're talking to their fathers, generally speaking, fathers and sons are pretty close growing up in whatever sport it might be. And I think a lot of times you'll see kids talking to their, and by I say kids, I mean they're now pro athletes, talking to their dads about problems they might be going through. And I think it's quite common, too, that parents would, at least in some way, shape, or form, try and help out. Maybe not in telling you, well, you got to have your hand up when you're, or your elbow up, or something to do with the way you're swinging, but maybe something to psychologically help you get through a dry spell or whatever.
See, I think where there's smoke, there is often fire. And if Colby Rasmus's dad was just like most dads that you're talking about, if their relationship was like most players and their dads, then I don't think we hear about any of this kind of stuff. And since we are, it seems to me that there must be something at least a little bit unusual going on here.
But there's a whole lot of people who've had...
Some think that his dad proved that he's a bit of a meddler.
By doing all the talking.
Yeah, and afterwards. I'm not so sure. I mean, I get the feeling that, you know, if I weren't a meddler and somebody was dumping on me, I might want to tell my side of the story. So I'm not so sure that proves it. It's just that the stories are there. I think if it was just as usual a relationship as all of the other ones, we wouldn't be hearing about it, Bill. And we are for some reason.
Don, here's the thing. An awful lot of people have been talking about, his name is Lee Rasmus, and he's a high school coach and a fairly good one, too. That team, when Colby was with them, I believe, won either a state or a national championship. So the guy is... he's
big deal, Bill. This is the show now.
No, I get that. I understand that. I think, though, his biggest mistake wasn't necessarily talking to his kid. His biggest mistake was talking to the media after the deal. Because that's what people react to. Well, how dare he? He can't be doing... Look, he's proving that Tony La Russa is right. He wasn't proving anything. Someone called him. He talked. And you know what? A lot of people would do that.
La Russa's no saint, too.
No, he isn't.
There are some good characters and bad characters and varying degrees of that in this story, as there are in many of them. And there's the notion that this kid Rasmus wasn't La Russa's guy when he was drafted and had it in for him ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure that that's true. Who knows? I just really firmly believe that you don't hear about this kind of thing if it's what you're talking about, which is, just a son calling his dad after the game saying, I had a bad one tonight, Dad, 0 for 4 and an error. Oh, there you go, son. You'll be fine. That does happen a lot. But people don't write stories about that, Bill.
This is The Gist of It with Hayes and Landry.
Don, I know you are a big Argo fan, big CFL fan, but specifically Argo.
See my blogging on argonauts.ca and cfl.ca on occasion.
There you go. They're 1-4. They could be 4-1, but they're 1-4.
Oh, and they could be 0-5, too, to tell you the truth.
You're right. They could be. A lot of this... To me, anyways, from what I've seen, a lot of it's coaching. They're making some questionable calls. I mean, the first one, and we've talked about this before, is Cleo Lemon. I still don't get that whole thing. But, you know, he wasn't there last week. Dalton Bell, I thought, played reasonably well. The last minute and 15 seconds of the first half aside, the Argos were the dominant team throughout the game. I thought they should have won it going away. And I won't comment an awful lot about that last, especially the last touchdown of the first half, which I thought was ludicrous. But I will question why you would send...
Why not? Do comment. I'm interested. What was ludicrous about that?
Well, the whole situation was... Firstly, the timing thing. To me, when I see the referee going off, waving the flag, half is over, the half is over.
That's silly. I mean, constantly during football games, they are adjusting the clock. This one just happened to be at the end of a half, but they are constantly doing that. They constantly do it in hockey. The guy waved a hanky. What, you do you want to take video replay out of the NHL and go back to the guy sitting between two wooden sticks with his hanky? I mean, just because he waved a hanky, it's got to go upstairs for review. They want to make sure they get it right.
But the problem with it is that's the only time they got it right. In other words, they'll check the clock on that last play, but they didn't check 3, 4, 5 plays before that. My argument is, for a second and a half in a situation like that, it's over. See ya. That's how I view it. And because the point is, if you're going to go and check the clock every play, you got to check the clock every play.
There is the possibility that they did not run the clock about 2 or 3 plays before that.
Quite possibly.
And it may have and should have been a wash.
The point is that aside, you still have a situation where the Argos are driving. They need a field goal to win. Their kicker, Noel Prefontaine, out with an injury. So their backup kicker is, he got a strong leg. He's kicked long field goals.
Grant Shaw
has kicked long, and he was, in fact, their kicker a couple years ago. It's not like he's totally inexperienced. But a 57-yarder with 24 seconds left on the clock.
Into a bit of a breeze.
Not a strong breeze, but still, 57 yards in any breeze is a test. And to me, what that showed was it 3rd and 4? I believe it was.
Yeah.
It showed so little confidence in his offense that he couldn't get 4 yards. And remember, there had been in that drive a 3rd and 10 that Dalton Bell did manage to connect on. So I just thought it was a bad call. I think that Shaw may have made a field goal if he got another 10 or 15 yards closer, but he gave it away.
Good, bad, That's for each individual to decide. That call, it's not a call I would have made sitting in front of my TV. I didn't like it. I would have gone for it, but I guarantee you I know what Jim Barker is thinking. If you go on third and four, and there's a 50-50 chance, I think, the percentages on CFL teams going on third and four is about, they get it about 51 or 52% of the time. I get what he is thinking, or may possibly have been thinking, which is don't kick the field goal, probably don't get the first down. People are going to say, why didn't he at least try that field goal? Kid's got a strong leg. So I think he just wanted to ensure that it was on the kid's toe, so maybe he wouldn't have to worry about that.
You know what? I wouldn't have been against that if it was Prefontaine. But Grant Shaw has not been getting the reps at that.
Prefontaine's not going to make a 57-yard
field. There you go.
So
clearly neither is Shaw.
I think that I would have gone for it. Personally, I would have gone for it. And game is over if you don't make it. If you get it, and I think Bell had converted on a third and 10 earlier in the drive, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
And,
I just
had to get it closer.
It's a confidence thing. That's the whole point. And you still had 24 seconds on the clock, which, as you know, in the CFL is, what, a day and a half?
Yeah.
So you had time.
Absolutely. I think it's a call I make. I go for it. But, you know, and again, earlier in the game, you can point to another call that may have lost in the game or a few. But, you know, they have it on the 15-yard line. It's second and long. And you have an ordinary backup quarterback and a stable of, you know, not the best receivers in the CFL. Some pretty good ones. And you throw to the end zone and it's picked off. You had pretty much 3 points guaranteed there.
Yeah.
You kick that field goal, you still win the football game. And that's what you can do in a football game, a hockey game, a baseball game, whatever. You can question what could or should have happened. And Friday night's game was no different than any other. Now, what they're going to have to do against Montreal, look, it's on the players too. You got to stop fumbling the ball. They didn't lose all their fumbles, but they've got to control the football. They've got to put together some first downs, and they've got to not take penalties against a tough team that has lost two in a row and is going to be damn certain that they'll not lose three in a row. It's going to be a tough one.
I don't know. You see, again, look, the Alouettes have been the team of the last decade in the CFL. I've got nothing but great things to say about them. And Anthony Calvillo has been nothing short of miraculous. But he's also, what, 52? I mean, at some point, they start coming back.
Yeah, he may feel 52.
Well, he's a great story.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how much I admire the man personally. Yeah. But I do start thinking, you know what? Old man time eventually starts catching up. And I look at the Argos and I see an awful lot of potential there. While I would be concerned playing the Owls, they should be able to beat them soon.
Won a lot of close games last year, and misfortune befell the opposition often, and it's just, you know what they say, the windshield and the bug, right? Last year the windshield, this year the bug. No, Bill, no. Have we reached the end of the line again for another week?
A lot of people would say yes, yes,
End of the rope, I think, is
okay.
Be a little bit more pertinent. I can't believe that we went through this and I did not give you a review of Cowboys and Aliens. I was looking forward to seeing it. I did not get a chance to see it.
Because you've been on this for a couple weeks
now. I really want to see it. I was going to go yesterday. I was kind of under the weather. I watched True Grit. Instead. So at least, you know, there was a Western, but got me to thinking about the phrase under the weather, too. Have you ever noticed nobody's ever over the weather? If you're feeling bad, you're under the weather. Don't you think if you're having a particularly good day, you might be able to say to somebody when they ask you, how you doing? Oh, I'm a little over the weather today. Can we start that? Do you want to try and spread that around?
Sure.
See if we have the power to spread a new catchphrase. And I want to close with this story very quickly. The Crystal Cathedral, are you familiar with it?
Sure, absolutely.
Robert Shuler, you see him on Sundays.
Yep.
And it's a Crystal Cathedral. It's a giant church in California. They are nearing bankruptcy. They're in protection, actually. And they're $50 million in debt. They were going to sell off some of those window panes, I guess, to raise the money to get out of debt. Now they've decided, Bill, to seek a faith-generated solution. Do you know what that means?
No.
Donations from their followers.
Really?
Yes. I say you don't need to do either, fellas. Take a lesson from your federal government. Just get together and vote to raise your debt steeple.
And that's the gist of it for another week. The Gist of It is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.